The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have told you turn the other cheek. And they made it with a bat. Fuck them protests in them cities. Told you go fight in the war. Vietnam, you died good riddance. That man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around a pump crack right up in your city. And they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war. Now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets. Killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue. One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. So one day you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
Good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. Broadcasting from behind these enemy lines known as USA Inc. I was talking to a family member today, fam. And when we were talking about the structure of the United States government, we were talking about the corruption of the federal government, as we were talking about a news story about only 200, and this is just a rough estimate, but about, let's just say, 200 out of 1,800 police departments across the United States have reported to the Justice Department or the federal government how many police have killed civilians. And Tamir Rice and Eric Gardner, article by The Guardian, revealed that Tamir Rice and Eric Gardner is not included in the federal statistics of reported homicides by police, to use their language. Homicides meaning death caused by someone. All right. So we were talking about that, and, you know, I was like, you know, the representatives and stuff, you know, they don't really represent us. We're dealing with a corporation who, it seems, from all the evidence, and I think it'd be right to come to the conclusion that it works on behalf of other corporations. So we're not really representing representatives, and that's just another lie, like the 13th Amendment that we've been taught. And in 1871, you know, the United States of America ceased to be a democratic republic and became incorporated in the area known as Washington, D.C., which we'll be talking about later. But it's a corporation, so you're not really electing representatives. That's incorrect language, because that would imply that this person represents your interests or represents your community, your town, your city, your district, represents you in Washington, D.C., and really you're not electing a representative. You're casting a vote for a corporate officer to, you know, be appointed from this district to the larger corporation, to the corporation USA Inc. And it is pretty much a foregone conclusion that these corporate officers basically advance, more than anything else, the agenda of corporations. So it's important. It is important, as I've heard other people say, the importance of words, the importance of language. And I was like, you know, let's not call him a representative. He's not a representative, or she's not a representative. She's a corporate officer pointed to USA Inc. to carry out the corporate agenda. So just thought I'll share that with you. I don't have that in the news to talk about today, but I thought I would mention that. We'll be writing my own piece on it, because you had Loretta Lynch talking about we can't, when we did a program last week, it's in the archives. Just look at for the podcast archives on blacktalkradionetwork.com for this program, Black Talk Radio News. Loretta Lynch, U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch, saying it was, you know, she doesn't support a federal mandate, meaning legislation from Congress signed into law by the president mandating that every police department submit these statistical data. And then I was reading another article yesterday about in 2006, that would be the Bush administration, 2 years before the Obama administration, the FBI published a report saying that for over 10 years that white supremacists, Ku Klux Klans organized, you know, people that had card-carrying members of a white supremacist group were infiltrating law enforcement. And then I was like, you know, that's all well and fine, but you're making the assumption that they weren't always there. And we look back over time, look at the evidence, look at our own history in the books, Negroes with Guns, how the police were members of the Klan and escorted the Klan, often protecting them. We saw that in Memphis this year, police protecting the Klan's so-called right to promote hate. And we see what that often leads to, like we saw in South Carolina with the Emmanuel 9. So, though, I mean, for her to say something like that, I mean, and then my family member said, well, who is she working for? And I understood the way that they meant it that, you know, she's supposed to be working for the people. And I was like, no, she wasn't even elected. She's appointed. She was appointed. Okay, U.S. attorneys are all appointed. U.S. Attorney General is appointed. And so, no, she's not working for the people. And her comments on not thinking that it's feasible, and even disagreeing with former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder that police shouldn't be mandated to report these statistics. I mean, that just, again, shows that she ain't working for the people. She working for, in that respect, for the police. And so if you got all these police departments not reporting, it makes sense to me that maybe they are really just branches of the Klan or branches of the neo-Nazis. And so they don't want to really alert anyone to how many, you know, black people, non-white people that they're killing. So of course I'm not going to bring attention to myself, and then I could, you know, show up in these reports when you do your analysis of all this statistical data that you're collecting of police killings, involved killings across the country. No, I wouldn't report it either. So again, the article I was reading, 1,800 police departments, at least in USA Inc.'s borders that they control, and only 200, as little as 200, actually reported anything at all. But I'm sure they were reporting those crime statistics and how many drug arrests that they made, and so that they could get those federal grants. You know, it's not a matter of their ability to report statistics. So again, for Miss Loretta Lynch to make such asinine comments, it's just, you know, it makes you question. It makes you question everything, and you should. So today we will be speaking with Mr. James Clingman about 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. See, a conscious black person be able to pick up on the fact that black faces in high places don't necessarily represent you. All right, so we'll be talking to Mr. James Clingman. He is a author, activist, educator, speaker, talks a lot about black economics on his website, blackonomics.com. I was just over there today reading on there, but we will be speaking about an event for 1 million conscious black voters and contributors that'll be taking place tomorrow on Friday. A training conference is planned right out in a small town outside of Philadelphia, PA. So like-minded conscious black people, there'll be a workshop for you to attend, and we wanted to ask other questions pertaining to this with Mr. Clingman today, who will be joining us here in just a minute or so. I also want to get his analysis of the Justice or Else rally, economic analysis. The rally just took place on Saturday, 10/10/2015. I read an estimated 750,000 people attended. I wonder how much money that generated for, you know, big oil, buying gas and buying food and whatnot. But this Milwaukee activist, a young brother, he had on a flag, he had on a hat that said, and y'all excuse my language, but yeah, well, I'll just say F your flag. So he had on a hat that said F your flag tour. And I have seen the social media videos and people talking about the F your flag movement with people stepping on that flag and saying, you know, that too does not represent us. It's just as bad. It just has a bloody history, just like that Confederate flag. And so he posted a YouTube video, excuse me, a Facebook video. He attended the Justice or Else rally, and he was questioning the spending habits of black people, who, he, as he states in the video just 5 minutes ago, you know, we're just participating and listening to everybody speak about allegedly black power and all this and that, and they merely went out there and gave their money to white vendors. So that's not circulating black dollars. So I want to get his, if he would share with us his economic analysis, since that is also a big component of the movement, 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. And after we get through speaking with Mr. Klingman, some of the things I did put in the news, including that article about the video I just told you about, I don't know specifically if it is today, but I know others are saying, historians, black historians are saying it was today, October 15th. And when the Black Panther Party was founded in 1966 in Oakland, California, Huey Newton, Bobby Seale founded the Black Panther Party for self-defense, and they practiced militant self-defense of minority communities, black communities, against the U.S. government and fought, and we should say the police, police terrorism, and fought to establish revolutionary socialism through mass organizing and community based program. So we want to recognize that, and we'll get to that after we get through speaking with our guest, who I believe we have Mr. Klingman on the line. Do we have you on the line, sir?
Yes, Scotty. How are you, my brother?
I'm not going to complain. I'm surviving behind these enemy lines best I can and trying to get stronger every day through networking with, you know, people of similar mindset.
I understand.
And if I may, I want to thank you, you know, for joining us. I know that you are a busy man about the people's business. So I want to thank you for spending this time. And I believe this is your first time not on the Black Talk Radio Network, because you've been on Time for Awakening Radio. But I do believe, sir, this is your first appearance on Black Talk Radio News, which I host. And
yes,
so I want to welcome
you. It is. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Well, we certainly appreciate the people who allow us to have this platform so we can have these important discussions and hear from people like yourself. Before we get started, Mr. Klingman, would you just I gave a brief bio of yourself. You're an author, activist, speaker, educator, and a black nationalist. And so I also linked to your website. You talk a lot about collective blackonomics, black people using their money to obtain power, collectively recycling black dollars. And so let me start like this. Aren't you one of the founders of this 1 million conscious black voters and contributors?
Yes, I'm a Fika Giuka, and myself are co-conveners of this movement. We decided to call the 1 million conscious black voters and contributors.
Okay. And so what do you primarily focus on? I'm assuming, but it's not good to assume anything, but your expertise is really in the people activity of economics, thus right. Your website, Blackonomics. So how long have you been into Blackonomics?
Oh, God. Well, the term, I coined that term back in 1998 when I wrote a book titled Blackonomics. And my website is Blackonomics. My newspaper column, which I've been doing for about 23 years, is titled Blackonomics. So I kind of adopted that brand, and it's been with me, like I said, since 1998. And what it really means is that economics is a little bit different for black folks from the way it is with other groups. And what I mean by that is that because of our history in this country and having been excluded in so many different areas of business and the general marketplace and assets that were given to other folks, black folks, as you well know, were not included in those kinds of activities. Thus, Blackonomics considers that, and it incorporates that in the thinking that black people have to do, have to go about our business in a little bit different way. But along that continuum of business, I understand it's all about green, but I believe that we should understand our history. We should know that our people were entrepreneurs in this country, even as far back as the late 1600s and the early 1700s, and right on up until we found ourselves in the 1960s walking away from our business enclaves and opting to follow the road we know today as politics. So Blackonomics is really a mix of psychological freedom and economic freedom.
Psychological freedom. And isn't it true, though, we've seen that all throughout any mass movement around, whether it was figures or organizations that really have always preached that. You know, a lot of people would say Marcus Garvey certainly preached black economics, collective economics. But then Malcolm X, you listen to a lot of his old lectures, he strongly preaches that. I believe Elijah Muhammad in the Nation of Islam at that time was strong on that as well. And then even the Black Panther Party, which was inspired by the teachings of Malcolm X and some of the lectures, and they also talked about it a lot. But was it ever a part of the civil rights movement? Because I've heard people say, you know, the whole sit-ins was a mistake, because then that was the beginning of giving black dollars to white businesses.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't call it a mistake.
Okay.
I would call it a misperception of what it meant.
Okay.
And I'll tell you a little story or anecdote that I heard a few years ago about Kwame Ture, but I believe that this whole notion of integration and all of the civil rights activities that took place, especially, as you said, in being able to access other folks' businesses, it was perceived by some as a right, but by others as a privilege. And those who perceived it as a privilege decided that they would go and spend their money with other businesses now that they had the right to do so, and they would walk away from black-owned businesses, their own brothers and sisters. But I always say, just because you have the right to do something, it doesn't mean that it's right to do it. So that was our big mistake. And the anecdotal comment I wanted to make is that a brother told me that he had talked to Stokely Carmichael, whose name, you know, later became Kwame Ture, and Stokely was telling him that he was in on those sit-ins, you know, they had in the 60s and the restaurants and all that.
Right.
And this white woman kept harassing him and just, you know, just call him all kinds of names, and why are you in here? You know we don't want you in here. Why do you keep coming in here? Get out of here. He did, you know, just berating him. And he said, he turned to the lady and said, I'm doing this because we have a right to go wherever we want to go in this country. We have a right to public accommodations. But lady, you can best believe that once we win this right to come into this and other restaurants, I'll never be in here again. That's the attitude we should have taken.
Right.
Just because we had the right to go and spend our money with people who hated us didn't mean it was right to do it. So the whole integration thing turned out to be a big
was there a lot of, would you say that was on miscommunication from leadership perhaps?
Yep. Yes. definitely. I think in many cases we were misled to believe that once we got our public accommodations, and I'm saying it was a battle worth fighting.
I understand.
But once we won that, all we had to do at the next step would be to get black people elected to public office. And we've been on that road ever since, bro. Ever since. Give you a prime example. Just last night, Cornell Brooks, the head of the NAACP, was on again. Wolf Blitzer, I think that's the only black man he knows in this country. But he said, Wolf Blitzer asked him, well, what do you think about debate? Oh, I didn't like it. They didn't talk about black people, blah, blah, blah. He said, well, what would you have liked to hear from them? What do you think is the most important thing they could have been talking about? You know what he said?
What's that?
Voting rights. Voting rights. Of all the issues we have in this country affecting black people.
Not mass police terrorism, not 21st
no.
century slavery and
no.
human trafficking.
No reparations, no economic issues, voting rights. As long as we keep going down that road thinking that's the most important thing, thinking that that's going to save us, we are going to continue to be at the bottom of every good category and at the top of every bad one. So we have misleadership. We had it back then. We have it now. And much of that is the reason for us being in the position we're in this country.
How does 1 million conscious black voters and contributors hope to change that, mindset among the masses? Because I think and this is, you know, me expressing myself, I think it's a waste of time to try to convince current leadership of established organizations that aren't already doing what they should be doing in terms of that. I think it's a waste of time to, you know, try to convince them to get on board, but there's masses of people who feel disaffected. The vast majority of people don't vote. Mass majority of people don't aren't in the streets for anything, you know. And I'm not saying anything about them, but I'm just saying, as I was reading on your arc on your website, you know, but there's a lot of potential out there, and how do we turn that potential to power? Is that what the 1 million conscious black voters and contributors is attempting to do, turn potential into power?
Yes, that's one of our major objectives. And how we would do that is not by going out trying to twist anybody's arm, trying to convince them that they need to come on and join us. Our website, IamOneOfTheMillion.com, is there for anybody to go and look at, to read the information, and then make their decision on their own as to whether or not this is for them. We're only looking for 2% of black people in this country. 2%. We believe that there's 2% among our people who is conscious enough to say, look, this, you know, what we've been doing hasn't worked. Let me look at this 1 million movement and see if there's something in here that attracts my attention. Two out of every 100 black people, that's all we're looking for. If we get more, that's beautiful. That's icing on the cake. But we know that there is what we call a remnant of black folks in this country who, like you just alluded to, who are willing and able and ready to join a movement through which we can leverage our dollars in the marketplace and among ourselves, and to leverage our votes and to finally get some reciprocity from this political system that we're right now just playing in. And we're playing just to play. We're not playing to win. So, you know, we're here. We're moving forward. We have members in 35 states. Just this weekend, there's a gathering, a training session in Philadelphia of the 1 million. And we're going, and we're not trying to tell people, stop what you're doing and follow us, you know, convince people to come on board. We're just looking for 2%, and we know that they're there. So our ultimate task right now, primary task, is to recruit and to keep putting information out through forums like yours to let people know where we are, how to get in touch with us, and what we're about. And they can read about it on the website, IamOneOfTheMillion.com.
In terms of the training, again, this conference, and I have linked to the conference, people, you could get that information. It will be in Philadelphia, October the 16th, which is tomorrow, October 16th right. and 17th. So that's Friday and Saturday. And so yep. what are some of the things that people can expect for those who are able to attend, and what sort of things should they bring? Should they bring a notepad and a pencil and be ready to take notes? And what can they expect when they come?
Well, they certainly should bring a notepad or a computer or an iPad or something where they can take some notes, because there will be a lot of information passed out. Of course, a lot of the information that will be distributed will be pre-printed, so they can bring a folder as well. But they can expect, if they're members, they can expect to be exposed to training that would help improve their leadership skills, their responsibilities, their roles with this movement. There are members among us who want to do more, and we want them to be able to do more, because we're all volunteer movement. So they can expect to acquire some training around areas of leadership. That's the main thing. And leaders are supposed to develop new leaders, and that's what Amafika and I are all about. We've been in leadership roles for decades, but we know we're not going to stay in those positions. It's about creating more leaders, working with younger folks, and mm-hmm. passing the baton. So that's what he and I are all about.
If I may interject on leadership, just to break yeah. it down in layman terms, or because we do have a lot of people with military training and whatnot, myself included. And one of the things that they did, you know, that's why you had the different ranks. If something happened to, let's say, the general, then the lieutenant general steps in, yeah. or the colonel yeah. general steps in. If you're dealing with, like, a platoon or something happened to the first sergeant, that's when the sergeant first class there steps into that leadership role. Something happened to him, that's when, you know, the staff sergeant steps up. So it's all, and we actually did go through all of that kind of cross training and preparing people to be able to step into leadership roles. But you, of course, everyone has to be equipped with the basics. And so I'm hoping they'll be able to get those basics there if they don't already have them.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, it's across all age groups. Mm-hmm. We encourage young people to get involved with this. And if they have some deficit in leadership skills, they can certainly get it from other people who are already on board and who have been around a few years and know how to impart that knowledge and then manifest that into real practical action that will move our people forward. Mm-hmm. The secondary purpose of the training and the gathering in Philadelphia would be to provide an opportunity for interested parties to receive an orientation to our movement. So if folks are not members, they can come, they can listen, they can be exposed to the information about the movement, and then, you know, they can make a decision if this is something that they feel like they want to participate in. Mm-hmm. So it's really a mm-hmm. two-pronged effort that will be going on in mm-hmm. Philly this weekend.
Right. And are there, I'm assuming, but I shouldn't assume, but are there plans to have these in other locations where you already yeah. have a number of members in certain regions?
Yes. We have one scheduled in February down in Florida, and we have one scheduled, I believe, March or April over in the Memphis, Jackson, Tennessee area. And we'll move on from there. We are okay. looking toward next August of 2016 to have our national convention relative to the political, the election for the next year. We haven't decided what city we want to hold that in yet, but that's coming as well.
I want to take a short station identification break and open up the phone lines for anyone who has any questions or comments. Please get those in quick. I'm only planning on doing an hour today, but just to let you know, Tando Radio Show will be on air at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time as he continues his series on preparedness, being prepared. Yesterday they talked about water being important, being able to obtain water, and talked about different ways to obtain water from nature and filter water. And then the day before that, they talked about food. And so he will continue that series today. That's on Tando Radio Show, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Black Talk Radio Network. If you have a question or a comment, of course, there's the conference line. That phone number is 641-715-3660. That's 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032 pound. And for those already dialed in, greetings to you. And just hit *61, and that will signal me your host. The other way to get in is to give us a call on the studio line. That's 704-951-5030. Our guest today is Mr. James Klingman, and we're talking about, among other things, black economics. We're talking about a training conference or session that is planned to take place tomorrow and Saturday in Philadelphia. And perhaps you have some questions, so give us a call. We'll be back on the other side.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Again, our guest today is Mr. James Klingman, one of the co-conveners of 1 million Conscious Black Voters and Contributors. And again, if you have any questions or comments, please use those numbers, the conference line or the studio line, to talk with him today. Now, getting back to the Philadelphia conference, Mr. Klingman, it will basically focus more so on its primary goal is to train leadership, right?
Yes.
Now, but at the same time, the secondary mission is to also, you know, allow people to come in and experience what this organization is about, what the people who are attending are about, and be able to get some information, make a decision on whether or not this is something that they want to become a part of. And so everybody's not a leader. But everybody has a position to play, a role to play in any
movement
or any army or whatsoever. So before we go to this caller, can you tell us, what does it take to become a member? What is expected of members who may later become leaders, but just want to, you know, they've heard enough, they've seen enough on the website, they talk to enough people, they want to become a member. How do they become a member?
Well, they go to our website, IamOneOfTheMillion.com. Scroll down, read the information. We encourage people to read the information. Don't just go there and sign up. Read the information. And among the numerous pieces of information we have is the one that explains what we're looking for in a person who wants to be a member. Now, we don't screen anybody with, oh, no, you can't be in. We don't do that. We want people to make up their own mind about it. And there's enough information on our site for them to be able to do that. But the form is on the homepage to sign up. Just fill the form out. And all we're looking for is email, name, address, phone number, and you're a member. But what you agreed to is that, number one, you will register if you know, depending on your state's election procedures, you will not be a part of any political party, Democrat, Republican, even independent parties. We're talking about being independent, critical thinkers when it comes to voting, and being willing to register if there is such a thing in your state as no party affiliation. no party affiliation. And then from that, we're looking for people to agree to vote as a bloc. Can you imagine what would happen? We had a million or more people saying, hey, we're going to vote as a bloc, or we're going to withhold our votes from you because you're not supporting black issues. So that's one criterion. The other is simply to agree to pool a small portion of your dollars to help pay for the operation of the movement, which includes our website management, our database, promotional materials, and, you know, basic things. We don't have any administrative costs where somebody's getting a salary and all that. And you agree to do that by purchasing some of the items that the movement has for sale, like T-shirts or tote bags or something like that, which in turn go to promote what we're doing as they are worn and carried. And the other thing is that we have an annual budget that we're going to put out. We've already put one out for 2015. And we're going to put one out every year, and we ask people to contribute to that. And this year is only $20. We're asking every member to send in $20 so we can have enough money for the rest of the year to do what we need to do. We're not out here looking for sponsors. We're not asking any corporations to help us. We don't want that. We want to pay our own way, and we're going to do that. It's not about begging anybody to help us do something financially, because as we grow, the financial responsibility will also grow less and less for each one of us. We had a million people, for instance, who sent $20 in 1 year. Look at what we'd have. So the same thing applies for votes and campaign contributions. So we want to spread the cost of this across the widest base possible and get as many people to participate, and it won't hurt any one person. It will just be a small amount, and we'll be able to do all the things we need to do to empower ourselves.
Area code 267, thank you for chiming in. Go ahead with your question or comment for our guest today, Mr. James Kling.
Good afternoon, Scotty, and good afternoon, Professor Klingman. I'm just calling in. This is Ralph calling from Philadelphia. And I'm just calling in to express my gratitude and appreciation for Professor Klingman. You, Scotty, a little while ago, you just said about leadership. Let me tell you, leadership, in my opinion, is a person that's willing to serve. And this brother and Brother Amafika are two brothers that are willing to serve to get our people minds out of the muck and mire, man. I'm a person that, and Scotty, you know me. You heard some of the things I've said about these politicians, you know. And now I'm hearing some of our folks talking about they want to vote for Hillary because she's the first woman. We don't want those kind of people in our organization, man. If people want to vote for her because she's the first woman. But look what her husband did. Her husband was the one that convinced me to be an independent in the first place. So I've been an independent for a long time. I was waiting to get with folks of a like mind. And when I say like mind, I'm not talking about the NAACP. I'm not talking about the Urban League. I'm not talking about that so-called Black Caucus. Those people have failed us. They have failed us. It's time for the grassroots organization like ours to come from the grassroots up and stop looking at these fakes preaching to us and dictating to us like you just seen this weekend down there in Washington, D.C. So I'm grateful. I just called in to express my gratitude for your guest today, Professor Klingman, and the other co-founder, Barbara Amafika. I appreciate these brothers. They have gave me a new sense of hope. I was about to give up, Scotty. Just seeing the garbage that our folks is into want to vote for Hillary Clinton because she's going to be the first woman. Man, that made me sick to my stomach. So I'm listening, and brother, I just wanted to say I appreciate you, Brother Klingman, and I am looking forward to that event this weekend. All right, Scotty, just had to call in, my man.
All right, thank you, Brother Ralph. Okay, I was, it appears that, I was trying to, someone was trying to call me. I think it was, one of my, comrades in the new abolitionist movement that focuses on, legislation and agitating for end to 21st century slavery and human trafficking. Max, I was not able to add you because it was trying to add other people from your end. So, you have to call, me individually if you want to get in. So please, give us a call there. Let me check the conference line. I think we got Max on the conference line. Someone from, South Carolina. And again, keep our people, on your mind that's in South Carolina. But, if this is Max, I know he's going to ask, cause I was about to ask this question, Professor Klingman, is about abolitionism. Is there a plank of abolitionists with this movement, this new movement of 1 million black conscious voters and contributors? But let's go to the caller, area code 803. Who do we have on the line? And go ahead with your question or comment.
Peace, Brother Scotty. Peace, Professor. This is Max Barthes indeed. Good to hear you again, brother. And I'm listening intently to the information. And I did have a couple questions. But Scotty, as you said, you had one you wanted to ask, and I'd love to hear the answer on that as well.
Mr. Klingman, so yeah, I'll ask the question. Is there a part of abolitionism a part of this platform? Because for the past 4 or 5 years, myself, Max, and others, and we have just a little small informal group on Facebook called Move to Abolish 21st Century Slavery, and we basically agitate, educate, inform people that slavery was never abolished. The 13th Amendment only amended right. it as punishment for crime. And, you know, just like Ralph alluded to his disappointment over the weekend with the Justice of Else rally, we were similarly disappointed with no clear message or demand to release our people from what you call a mass incarceration, which we know is a continuation of slavery. So is that something that you all with the conscious black voters and contributors have thought about or thinking about making part of your platform?
Oh, yeah. If you go to our website and read the, planks in our platform, you will see a couple of planks that deal with legislation, that deal with this whole notion of incarceration and police brutality and all these things, because we felt it was very important, and we have aligned ourselves with a group called ONUS, with Ms. Gerald Sanders out of St. Louis, who is working on legislation to be presented and passed by the Congress that would assist in the areas that you just alluded to. And you're right. You know, many black people don't know that slavery is still legal. We think we've been freed and that they've never read the 13th Amendment. And we must change those kinds of things. And my contention, Brother Scotty, is that they won't change because we don't have the leverage to get bills passed, for instance. You remember when the lady got shot out in San Francisco by the I don't know if he was Mexican or what. A week later, there was a bill at Congress put forth by none other than Bill O'Reilly.
Bill O'Reilly introduced a bill.
Hey, we need Bill O'Reilly. He put forth a bill called Cates Law, and they're pushing Congress to sign this, and I think he has enough people to sign it to make it law. Hmm. Now, how come we don't have a Sandra Bland law? How come we don't have an Eric Garner law? How come we don't have a Tamir Rice law? Because our black politicians, most of them are useless, putting it very bluntly. And we, the people, black people, do not have a force that we can leverage these kinds of efforts to our benefit, because we just give our votes away. We give them all to the Democrats. They know they're going to get them, so they don't have to do anything for us. But you're right. We must have components within our movement that address the very specific issues that deal with black people, and you just named one, and the brother who called in from South Carolina. I mean, But we're not going to be able to do that if we don't have a strong vehicle of committed black folks who are willing to pool their votes and pool their dollars and get benefits back for all of the work that we do and have done in creating wealth in this country and providing empowerment for everybody else in this country except ourselves.
Max, did you said you had a couple of questions. You can go ahead and ask those.
Yes, sir. Well, greetings, Professor. How are you?
Hi, bro. How are you? Are you in Columbia?
I'm in Eastover, and I literally just had a sticker put on my house today to tell us that we have to vacate.
House
are inhabitable. Yeah, but that's the issue we'll get through in time. You're here, and we've never had the opportunity to speak to you before, and I love the things that I'm hearing, but I do have a couple questions. One,
sure.
You said that you would be voting as a block, right? Well, that's very much
right.
How unions do it. Am I correct?
Right, right.
Well, in that process, who makes the decisions of what you're voting towards? I mean, what is the conclusions? Somebody says, we all vote for X person because
right.
he does such and such and such, or she does such and
right.
such. Where does those decisions come from?
That will come from the group, as I said, I don't know if you heard earlier. In August of next year, our plan is to have our own convention, our own independent voting convention. And from that, we will decide, not myself or any one person, we will decide at that meeting. And, of course, as we move forward and add new planks to our platform, we will decide who we're going to support, or we'll decide if we're not going to support anybody. Because right now, as you just said, man, there are no specific comments or levels of support coming from any of these candidates right now toward black people. Why? Because they have no price to pay. There's no cost for them to pay for not doing it. If you saw that Dog and Pony show the other night on TV, there was one question put forth that had to do with black folks, and it made no sense. Do black lives matter or do all lives matter? What kind of crazy question is that? So, you know, we will decide.
It was either or of something that didn't exist.
Exactly. We will decide who we'll vote for, and our vote for whomever will be based upon the fact that they have stated publicly that they're in support of whatever issues we decide to put forth, and they will put it in writing.
So
I
mean support also for legislation, right? That, like you mentioned, we had Sis Sanders on the other day about the legislation. And so that's included. They had to be behind legislation that
exactly.
we have vetted. And that's
that's right.
Max,
that's
did you
right.
have some
so
other?
It's not going to be one person. Mm-hmm. It'll be the group. It'll be the movement. It'll be the members of the movement who will make those decisions.
So there's no board of directors. There's just the members coming together annually to do a vote?
No, not annually. This
or
is our first time.
Or
now, well, we've been in existence for about a year. Our first gathering was at in Washington in June for Carl Nelson's Power Talk. We had several members who came to that. The next one is this weekend in Philly. So we're relatively new but growing. So the first national meeting will take place in August. After that, I don't know if we'll have national meetings every year or every quarter, whatever. That hasn't been decided yet. What I want to make clear to you is that there's not one person dictating, oh, this is what we're going to do. We're not trying to turn ourselves into another NAACP or Urban League or anything like that. This is something that nobody else is doing, and we are going to make it work because we're going to have a leveraged group of committed, conscious black folks.
I understand where you're coming from on that, and I would love to support it, but as I said, I have some questions, and I also can make a comment if there's time available, Scotty.
If you can make it quick, we do have some other callers.
As abolitionists, we have found the that because people lack have a lack of knowledge about the circumstances we face in reality and the clear and present danger of our children with bounties on their heads, upwards of over $250,000 to incarcerate one teenager like Khalif Browder, and the brutality that comes along with turning people into commodities, predominantly people of color, and in particularly black people, where these police are getting quotas and the prisons have quotas, and
yeah.
The private prison industries have gone global to the point where they have their own standing armies. So this clear and present danger, we found a lot of people don't give it the respect and the attention it deserves. It didn't happen at the Million Men March. It was one group of women who came out and spoke adamantly about freeing people, but they were the only ones who really gave it that attention. It didn't happen in the debates, Republican or Democratic, about that. So we find that in order for it to be of an importance, we need abolitionists standing there making sure it's of importance to that group that we're involved in. We're 2,500 strong just on the Facebook group alone, and I know personally I've reached tens of thousands of abolitionists out there, and we'd love to support something as a bloc ourselves, but we want to make sure that freedom is at the top of that list as a bloc.
Well, I tell you what you
is that
do.
Possible?
Go to our website, read the 15 planks on our website, IamOneOfTheMillion.com, and I believe there are at least three that deal with what you're talking about. And you and I can follow up. Scotty has my number. You and I can follow up on this. We're right in the same state, so we can have further conversation about how this can be shaped. And I would love for you to invite your 2,500 members to consider joining the 1 million conscious black voters and contributors, because there's power in numbers. We have to organize, you know, we have to organize those numbers. And then we can make some real change in addition to just having dialogues about our problems.
Yeah, only a certain segment of that membership of abolitionists would qualify, because it's a diverse group. It's a non-religious group, and it isn't, you know, focused on any kind of ethnic issues or cultural issues. So, you know, lots of white people, Hispanic people, Asian people are consider themselves new abolitionists. But we'll certainly put out that invitation to our black members, you know, who are very active.
Of course. We are a black movement. Nothing against anybody else, but this is about black folks.
Right.
And, you know, but we appreciate anyone who's out there fighting on our behalf. I don't care what color they are. Mm-hmm.
Well, that leads me to my final question, and then I'm done. And I know this question is kind of a difficult one, but I guess it needs to be asked. How do you feel about people of multiracial descent with African-American heritage as well? Is that part of the black group that you're referring to?
Well, I'm not trying to differentiate between or among different hues of people and people who were born by, mixed marriages and all of that. Of course. I mean, black to me is more of a state of mind than a color. It's a state of mind.
In this day and age, you have to ask, because not everybody feels that same way.
Oh, don't worry about that. No, I mean, I'm not going to get into, you know, trying to screen people based on phenotype and genotype and all that. It's about a level of consciousness. It's about consciousness, man.
Okay.
But I just want people to know this is a black movement for black people.
All right, thank you, Max.
Thank you, Scotty.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot, man.
All right, we're going to go to our next caller. Thank you for being patient. Area code 973. You're on Black Talk Radio News. You're speaking with Mr. James Kleeman today. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, great. Good afternoon to all the gentlemen. And I have to say that I do like the organization to keep focus on black issues, because when we start to stir the pot, everybody wants to bring their issues into it. One of the things I'm most concerned about with the organization is that the debate took place, and I want to know, when you talk about a force, when you look at the NAACP, you look at other organizations, And they, you know, you look at the National Action Network, how they have their convention every year. What do you hope to achieve over that? I mean, you know, when we bring these million people to, like, let's say, for instance, do you, all right, my question is, you just stated that you didn't think Bernie Sanders or any of those candidates are really viable. So would you tell the members of the organization not to vote for either, or would you tell them not to vote, or you tell them to vote your own conscience, or what would you do? I mean, you know, you just made a comment with respect to that, and I just want to know what your answer would be. And also, what do you hope to achieve that the other organizations that are not achieving? And again, I'm with the People's Organization for Progress here in New Jersey, and we do, you know, I do respect that you want to keep the issues of black people on the forefront, because I believe that when you put too many hands in the soup, it spoils it.
That's right.
I'm going to let you go ahead, because I truly, we have some white people in our organization, but I hate to say it like this, they do know their place. They know that, you know, our issues are extremely important, and they do pretty much, you know, they're pretty well standards when it comes to that, and they understand that. So they really are, I would say, you know, understanding of what our goals and what we're trying to achieve. So, in so much, I'll just take my comments off. I'll take what you have to say, and I'll mute my line. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks a lot, sis. Let me first say that we are looking to coalesce with other groups and other individuals. So, again, I invite people to go to the website, read the information, and decide if they would like to be a part of this movement. This movement is not some kind of a kingdom for a couple of people. It is a movement that will be comprised of individual, conscious black folks who have just as much say in it as anyone else. And as far as the voting thing goes, there are two things we can do. We can leverage our votes behind a candidate who supports our issues, or we can withhold our votes from that candidate or any candidate if we so decide. We're not, and it's not about who I like and who I don't like. It's about what the group decides based upon what the candidates say and write in terms of support for black people. Now, if none of those candidates who are running, well, it'll be down to two by then. If those two refuse to stand up and say anything in support of black people, support our planks in our platform, then we're gonna, I and most, I would say, all of the conscious black folks would say, we're not voting for anybody. We'll withhold our votes. What's the point of participating in a game that you can never win? And up to this point, we have been doing that. So leverage is about negotiating from a position of strength, not weakness. And if we go in from a position of strength, number one, having established a firm economic base, we're not depending on anybody to give us any money from corporations and all this stuff, so they can't pull the plug whenever they get ready. And then we go in with a committed block of voters who say, we're going to put our support behind you, but here's what we want. If you're not willing to give us what we want, then we're not going to support you. And it may, in fact, come down this time to two people running that black folks say, I don't like either one of these. Well, if you don't like either one, what's the point going and giving one of them your vote? And the people say, oh, it's about the lesser of two evils. No, it's about the evil of two lessers. And why should we be put in a position or put ourselves in a position to just give our votes away simply because people are telling us, oh, you have to vote. Why? Oh, people died. Well, people died to have black businesses. Are you out here saying we need to start more businesses like I am? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. So we have to change this game, change this paradigm about voting and supporting people blindly simply because they have a D or an R behind their name.
And I would
can I still speak? I have another follow-up question to that,
sure,
please.
Sure, go ahead.
Here in New York City, I remember when who was running, and on the talk radio show when they had more African-Americans talk shows, the thing was, oh, you can't split the vote. If you don't vote, that means more of the Republicans get the vote, so you're throwing the vote into the Republicans' hands, so you're going to have to vote Democratically, because everybody was calling and saying, well, you know, I don't like this candidate, and I'm not really supporting this candidate, but if you stay home and you don't vote, that means there's going to be more votes for the Republicans, so it's always this thing, it's best to have a Democrat in the office, quote-unquote, because, like you said, it is the lesser of two evils, and if you tell the person stay home and not vote, then they feel that, it's this in the window here that you have to vote regardless, even if you put Mickey Mouse on the ballot, somebody
let
who's
me
not
use
even
this,
on the ballot,
caller.
You have to make that conscious effort,
caller,
to go out and vote and not to say not to vote.
Caller.
That, because I know back here, yes, when they had, I forgot the guy who was running, it was always this innuendo about, if you don't vote, you give the Republican a vote. That's another vote for the Republican. So that's my last question. Thank you so much.
Mr. Kleeman, go ahead and respond.
Yeah. 75, 80 years ago, maybe less than that, black folks voted majority Republican. Since that time, we voted majority Democrat. What have we gotten? We didn't get anything under either party. One party ignores us now, and the other party takes us for granted. So this whole notion about, well, if you don't vote for Democrat, Republican's going to win. I don't care what their label is. If a Republican is standing up and saying, look, here's what I'm going to do for black people. Yes, I agree with reparations. Yes, I'm going to deal with this police brutality. Yes, we're going to prosecute these cops who kill black men. Hey, I don't care what party he's in. We've been too hung up on that kind of stuff. And that's why we're in the position we're in. Because, oh, we got to vote Democrat. Why? I mean, where's the rule that says that? And I don't support either candidate. I'm an independent thinking voter.
Participating in the voting block.
Politics is about... Mm-hmm. Politics is about self-interest.
Right.
Black folks need to get that through our heads. If you're not getting anything back from it, then you never win.
People,
and that's why they continue to treat us the way we treated, as you saw in those debates. We were ignored.
Listeners, I believe what we're speaking about is creating a lobby. For those who know what that means, who pay more attention than others in politics. For example, you got AIPAC, the American Israeli Political Action Committee. Now, this is a small, in terms of numbers, minority of people who classify themselves as Jews, who pool their resources and have tremendous, I would say more than anyone, influence and power in deciding legislation and foreign aid and military, assistance, all directed at Israel. So they're a lobbying group, just like we talked about, New Abolitionist Radio, and I talk about on this program, the private prison lobby for the corporations. And you got Hillary Clinton with two prison lobbyists working for her campaign. So what you're talking about in terms of the area, people activity area of politics, is becoming a lobbying force with real power. That's what it sounds like I'm hearing. You're in the development stages, the infancy of developing an organization on the level of power like an AIPAC or any other, the NRA or any other organization fighting for their issues.
My latest column is titled Political Exclusion. And in that column, I say exactly what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly what you just said. That where is our super PAC? Where are our lobbyists? We always opting out. The largest and so-called strongest and biggest, baddest organization we have is NAACP. But they're 501c3, which says they can't endorse, even though we know they're all Democrat,
mm-hmm,
but they can't endorse, they can't put money into individual candidates' campaigns. And you just cited a couple of groups, but there are many more. Look at the NRA. Why are they so powerful? Black folks don't have organizations like that.
Therefore, we're always operating from a position of weakness. And in this piece, my latest piece, I just turned it in today, it talks about that. We're always opting for 501c3s and with not-for-profit and all this kind of stuff. These unions, they're 501c5s, bruh. They can put money into it. They can buy politicians, as Dr. Claude Anderson says. Black people need to be able to buy some politicians just like the rest of these folks do. And if we don't have enough money to buy them, we need to rent a few. And stop just giving our votes away and getting nothing back for it. That's just the height of stupidity. Right. That we keep doing this over and over, because we used to be all Republicans. Now we're all Democrats, and we're still trying to figure out this game. The game is about self-interest.
Mr. Kleeman, have come. I said I was only going to do an hour today, but there's just one more area. If you could give us about maybe 10 more minutes, 15 minutes, but I want to talk about Blackonomics and this video that this young activist from Milwaukee who attended the Justice or Else rally over the weekend, and he made a video of what was happening as people were leaving the grounds there after attending the Justice or Else rally. And I want to get your economic analysis on what this young man is talking about. And he says he has a plan, but I do want to warn the listeners and whatnot. If you have any young children in the car or in the room, you may want to wait and listen to the podcast later, because there is some cussing. Some language being used by this young man that you might not want your children to hear, but the digital radio realm is not regulated or anything like that, and we grown folks and whatnot, and so this is this young man speaking about something very important, but I just want to warn people about the language. Do you have time for that, Mr.?
I got as much time as you need, bro.
Okay. All right. Well, first, let me take a quick station identification break, and then we'll roll straight into that video, and we'll come back. And Mr. Kleeman, I would like to get your economic analysis of what this young man is talking about. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. Our broadcast every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time right here on Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
So instead of legislation, in my opinion, it takes education. The whites have to be re-educated so that the racism that they have in their hearts can be eliminated, and our people have to be re-educated so that we will know how to do something for ourselves, instead of waiting for others to do it for us all the time.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com. And this is a video.
Now, see, we just did Justice Earls.
All right, it just started. This is Von L. Mays. Just for context, because he's asking a question. He says, "This saddens me, family," which you'll hear what is has him say it. And he was asking for people's thoughts. And this is a young activist out of Milwaukee by the name of Von Mays, and he is with the F Yo Flag movement. Y'all, again, might have seen some of the pictures of the young people desecrating the U.S. flag and saying, we don't like the Confederate flag nor this flag either. So this is the movement that he's with. His hat says F Yo Flag Tour. Just give you some background. So let's go into this video.
Now, see, we just did Justice Earls talking about boycotting, right? Every truck lined up, serving food, none of them black. This is what I'm talking about when people come out here for shit like this and they don't come out here for the right fucking reason. Because what did we just talk about?
Patronizing.
Now we have hundreds of fucking people right back. The event just ended not 5 minutes ago, and they right back to spending their money with non-black motherfuckers. Milwaukee, we ain't finna have this. You know what I'm saying? Y'all already know what I got in place. What the plan is, let's get together and let's do this shit. You know what I mean? No. Hell no.
Mr. Kleeman, of course, you weren't able to see the video, and I assume you can imagine. But he's holding up his video camera, his cell phone, taking a video of himself like a selfie. But he's showing you all of these food trucks behind him with hundreds of black people lined up. And so your comments, if you have any on that, what we just heard.
Well, it's really not surprising, but comforting to know that somebody else had that same observation. I wrote about that in an email, I think last Monday. I was informed that there would, you know, at the same time that the demonstration or the event was going on, the Taste of D.C. was going on as well, and that they fenced off about a 2-block-long area, which was right next to where the brothers and sisters were, and all the vendors in there, you know, white vendors selling food. And of course, on the way back to the buses and everything, black vendors lined up at those places, because there were only four, from what I understand, four black food vendors there. They were overwhelmed, and a lot of the white folks there at that march made tons of money because they were there to sell food. Now, what a coincidence that they were there at the same time all the black people were there. And I wrote a piece called The Prophet of Protest, and it speaks to what that young brother was talking about. We protest, and we travel all over the country to marches and everything, and we spend a ton of money to get there, to stay there, to eat there, and we come back home. And we count how many people were at our protests, but white folks end up counting how many dollars we spent at our own protests.
Wow, could you say that again? I've never heard anyone put it that way. Please say that again.
We count the people at our protests, and white folks count the dollars that were spent at our protests. And to give you even more of a historical perspective on my part, in 1994... I wrote a column. I hoped that Minister Farrakhan would have seen it, saying that when we go to the Million Man March in October of 1995, I just hope and pray that black people have enough sense to look for black-owned buses to charter to get there, to stop at black-owned gas stations if that's possible on the way, to eat at black restaurants when they get there, to stay in a black-owned hotel or a black bed and breakfast like I did when I got there, and to make sure that we spend as much money as we could going to our protest and coming home as we could, not to go there and make other people rich and we stand up on a stage complain about them. That's just ludicrous, to borrow Mike Tyson's phrase. But we do that all the time. We have these marches and protests, and the white folks end up benefiting. I'm sure they love to see us march and protest because they know they're going to make some money off of it. Same way with Trayvon Martin. They had a big protest after he got killed down there in Florida. The people, when they hit the street, went to the police station. And guess what they held up in their hands?
What's that?
An Arizona iced tea and a bag of Skittles. Mm.
Oh, I remember that. I remember that.
All that money. Well, why would you go and spend your money to buy some Skittles and iced tea, which had nothing to do with this brother being killed? But why would you go and buy that, putting money in the pockets of white folks who own the stores that you buy it from and the people who make it, to go and say how much you're angry or, you know, you're protesting what happened to Trayvon Martin?
I attended a church demonstration or rally, a meeting. They just, you know, just had speakers and stuff like that. Different people attended. People from the Nation of Islam was among the speakers, some local attorneys, and then this group called Thug, which is True Healing Under God, of the guy who runs that. Known him all my life, but he's excuse me, how can I put this? He's a Al Sharpton acolyte. Came up under his tutelage and whatnot, and he's in our local area here. So they put together this demonstration at a church in Charlotte. So I, you know, they told me about it. I came out in support as well as some of my other family members, and they told the young people to wear their hoodies. I even put my hoodie on. But what I did not do is buy a bag of Skittles and then, you know, right. at the end of this meeting, they had everybody come up there and put their Skittles on the offering table. I was like, oh my God.
See what I'm saying? How silly is that? How silly is that, that even off a dead young brother, some white businesses are going to make some money? Look at I Can't Breathe when the NBA players wore the black T-shirts up there in New York. Don't you know those shirts were printed by white folks and they were sold by white folks? You get a copy of my latest book, Black Dollars Matter, Teach Your Dollars How to Make More Sense, and you'll read a column in there on I Can't Breathe. Now, why in the world will we do anything, symbolic or otherwise, in the name or in the memory of Eric Garner, whom we saw be choked to death on television? He had the copyright on those words, I Can't Breathe. But yet, white folks made money off of what he, off his last dying words. Because
we're not being conscious.
Exactly. And we got these guys, Jay-Z bought 1,000 shirts and LeBron wore one, and everybody, oh, look what they did. That's nothing. That's symbolism. That's not substance. That's symbolism.
But if you're going to do symbolism.
They bought the shirts from a white guy.
Right.
Who was a friend of Russell Simmons' so-called political advisor. His name is Michael Skolnick. He's the one that recommended the shop where they buy them, and they got them from a company in Canada that has a manufacturing company in Haiti where they pay our brothers and sisters in Haiti $6 a day to make those shirts.
That's slavery.
I mean, how stupid is that, man? How can we be out here protesting slavery and the 13th Amendment, and we're participating in making it happen?
It's all about being conscious, and everybody ain't conscious.
Right.
And I think that's it's realistic for y'all to set a goal of 2%. Because, but
exactly.
Everybody's
not going to go. We understand that everybody's not going to go. Everybody didn't go, you know, didn't want to go with Harriet Tubman. Everybody don't want to be free. They comfortable. I got a good job. I'm fine. They feed me good every day. You know, but there are some folks out here who are conscious and who will go, and we understand that. And those are the folks we're looking for.
Now, on the issue of symbolism, you know, I founded the Black Talk Media Project because Malcolm X made me understand the power of propaganda, and then how propaganda has always been part of warfare and studying the history of that. So I do understand why people want to use symbolism, but be conscious about it, like you just said. If we're going to promote this brother's case with his dying last words, then at least, you know, we should have found a black screen printer, and, you know, that's just being conscious.
And his family should have gotten the profit from it.
Exactly. His
not
dying
some
last
white
word.
Company in Canada and some white company over in Long Island.
So it's about being conscious. The intentions were good, but the consciousness of the people who put it together.
Exactly.
Was
I'm glad
missing.
You said that, because I get excited and sound angry sometimes, which I am sometimes, but I'm glad you said that. I'm not saying the people's intentions were wrong. I'm just saying, we need to investigate. We need to be critical thinkers. We need to go a step beyond just what's on the surface. Symbolism is fine, like you said, but if there's no substance behind that symbolism, no action, then what is it? It's just symbolism.
Well, Professor Kleeman, I want to thank you for spending this time with us today. And again, I want the listeners and those who will listen later on the podcast to go to IamOneOfTheMillion.com. IamOneOfTheMillion.com. You'll also find the information about the training conference that will be taking place tomorrow, Friday, and on Saturday. This is a leadership training conference for members, but it is also open to non-members for those who want information to have so that they can make a determination if they want to be a part of this movement. But Mr. Kleeman, before you leave us, do you have any thoughts you would like to leave with the listeners? If we could just summarize what we've discussed today.
My thought would be that I would encourage everybody to try to, as best as they can, to understand the dominant relation, the dominant submissive relationship between economics and politics. Understand that economics runs politics. Understand that black people must be economically empowered if they're ever going to be politically empowered. Those are the two wings of our movement, economics and politics, but we know that economics comes first. So I would encourage folks to, like you said, go to our website. If you know, if they want to know more about me, go to blackonomics.com. And I just appreciate the opportunity to be on your show, Scotty, and hope we can do it again sometime.
Most certainly, sir. And you stay safe behind these enemy lines that I call USA Inc., and we'll talk to you again.
All right, my brother. Peace.
Peace. All right, that was Mr. Kleeman, one of the conveners of 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. Again, check out the website, IamOneOfTheMillion.com. Do want to recognize again, I'm not sure about this, if today, 10/15, is the actual date that the Black Panther Party was founded by Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale in Oakland, California in 1966. When I found out that fact, you know, because I was born in November of 1966, and I, when, you know, people talk about zodiac signs and you a Sagittarius or you a Virgo or whatever, I said, no, I was born in the year of the Panther. That's no joke. That's no joke. I just really feel a strong connection to what these brothers and sisters were doing, the legacy that they left behind. And I still feel like, you know, that their platform is still valuable today, valuable and viable today, and that they were engaged in doing things that must be done in order to defend against the enemies of our communities. And so I want to just share a little bit of information about them. And then I want to play what I call message music, where I have just clipped, you know, some of clips from lectures and stuff like that. And I back it with music from these brothers. So we'll feature some of the former members of the Black Panther Party as we salute the Black Panther Party for self-defense, which later then became the Black Panther Party. And it was actually a real political party. A lot of people don't know that. They think that it was just a organization that was providing, you know, meeting the needs of the people through social programs that they call survival programs, or they were just out there patrolling the police or patrolling the pigs, to use the language of their day. And no, they were actually a political party. I think I'm trying to think of which one of them ran for Congress or something like that. And then there you actually have some former Panthers who are in who have joined Congress. And I'm not saying, I'm not highlighting that and suggesting that anyone should join USA Inc. or want to be an executive corporate officer or a corporate officer in USA Inc. But we got to be involved in all areas of people activity. We have to infiltrate everything, all their institutions and stuff like that. We have to infiltrate them. They do the same to us. That's what COINTELPRO was about. They destroyed the Black Panther Party, and they recruited other black people. I hesitate to call them black people. I usually refer to people who have an identity crisis and are more confused than others about racism and white supremacy. I call them African Americans, you know, because they identify with the enemy. And like Malcolm have often said, you know, we not Americans, we victims of Americans, victims of the Republican Party, victims of the Democratic Party, and every other party in between. We victims. We not Americans. And so, you know, I'm not scolding anyone or belittling anyone, but, you know, perhaps they just haven't come to that level of consciousness that they are they're separating themselves from identifying with the enemy, the people who are still practicing slavery and human trafficking. So want to salute the Black Panther Party. Let me just share this information and we'll play the clips in October of 1966 in Oakland, California. Huey Newton and Bobby Seale founded the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. The Panthers practiced militant self-defense of minority communities against the U.S. government and fought to establish revolutionary socialism through mass organizing and community-based programs. The party was one of the first organizations in U.S. history to militantly struggle for ethnic minority and working class emancipation, a party whose agenda was the revolutionary establishment of real economic, social, and political equality across gender and color lines. Black Panther theory. The practices of the late Malcolm X were deeply rooted in the theoretical foundations of the Black Panther Party. Malcolm had represented both a militant revolutionary with the dignity and self-respect to stand up and fight to win equality for all oppressed minorities, while also being an outstanding role model, someone who sought to bring about positive social services, something the Black Panther Party, the Black Panthers would take to new heights. The Panthers followed Malcolm's belief of international working class unity across the spectrum of color and gender, and thus united with various minority and white revolutionary groups. From the tenets of Maoism, they set up the role of their party as the vanguard of the revolution and worked to establish a united front, while from Marxism, they addressed the capitalist economic system, embraced the theory of dialectical materialism, and represented the need for all workers to forcefully take over the means of production. And I have linked to this expose on the Panthers, and I think that they have laid out a blueprint. And again, some people, they struggle with, you know, they struggle with some of the tenets and some of the things that they were involved in, but that doesn't mean you got to follow everything that they do, but you incorporate some of those principles, some of those things that were working into what you're doing. All right, because they've already tested it out. Nobody's saying you got to be a communist or a Maoist or a Marxist or anything like that. But it's just adapting the strategies and just, you know, critically thinking about, did these programs work? Do black people today need survival programs? Most certainly we do, with all of the restrictions that they put on people and kicking people off the rolls for family assistance, what they call it, TANF. Temporary assistance for needy families, excluding felons from being able to live in public housing or even get SNAP benefits, meaning, you know, food stamps to be able to feed themselves. And so certainly we need of those type of survival programs, where then those people, instead of having to go rob someone so that they can eat, or sell drugs so that they can have a place over their heads or something like that, since the government doesn't want to help them with all the taxpayer money they stealing, and they don't want to help the people who need the most help. So then that is where we can follow the models of the Panther in terms of survival programs. And yeah, there are some individual churches and 501c3s that address these needs, but obviously they either are overwhelmed or their ministries are falling far short. They're not able to meet the demand of the masses of poor people, neglected people, abused people in this country. So, you know, again, it's not all about, oh, I got to be a Marxist or I got to be a communist or not. But again, you know, I was tripping on the fact that the Democratic Party was basically asking every one of those candidates on the stage to pledge allegiance to capitalism. And they were taking a dig at Bernie Sanders because he says he's a self-described socialist and all of that. And his brand of socialism, I would not think, would fall into the category of the social programs or the socialism of the Black Panther Party. So let's not get that twisted. But they want to attack that name, period. Socialism, that label, you know. And so you got to pledge allegiance to be a capitalist. Well, what has capitalism gotten us? Chattel slavery is capitalism. Today, 21st century modern slavery and human trafficking, that's all a product of capitalism. talked about Thomas Jefferson figured out a formula that for every black baby born to an enslaved African woman on his plantation yielded anywhere from 4% upwards of 4% increase in his personal wealth. And the other day I was reporting on the Croatian Corporation of America talking about they got a 7% dividend, something like that, which is pretty high to, you know, for people investing in 21st century slavery and human trafficking. That's capitalism. They doing the same thing that Thomas Jefferson did and following that same formula. So salute to the Black Panther Party. Never forget, we still got Panthers who are in prison as political prisoners. There has been, you know, justice or else, then nobody really asked for a demand of the release of the COINTELPRO era Panthers. Many of them dying in prison or get released. 2 days later, they're dead from cancer or something like that the enemy then infected them with. So this is what it means to be conscious. I guess consciousness is synonymous with informed, being fully informed. So salute to the Black Panther Party, our political prisoners, and all the advocates, the Panthers that's not in prison, that's still out there putting in work. So we do want to recognize and commemorate the anniversary of the founding of the Black Panther Party. The original six Black Panthers were Elbert, Big Man Howard, Huey P. Newton, a co-founder and the defense minister, Sherman Forte, Bobby Seale, chairman, also a co-founder, and then also Reggie Forte, brother of Sherman, and little Bobby Hutton, who was a victim of police terrorism and murder. He was the treasurer. So salute to those brothers and sisters. Coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, Tando Radio Show will be on air. So I'm going to close it out with what I opened up the program with, and I'm going to let y'all listen to it in its entirety and then follow that up with some more Panthers for our Panther salute until Tando Radio get ready to come on air. But this is Jack Metaphor talking about as a tribute to the Panthers, along with Panther Cub Chairman Fred Hampton with a spoken word piece also part of this. And so thank you for tuning in. Thanks to our guest today, Mr. James Klingman. Also to the callers who called in and chime in with their perspective and asking some valid questions, because we're always supposed to ask questions. You can't get an answer until you ask the question. All right. Till tomorrow. Peace and blessings. Recognize the fact you live behind these enemy lines. Casualties are being created every day. It's Battlefield America out there. So since it's battlefield, you need to develop battlefield awareness. Develop that battlefield awareness, develop that battlefield skill, and then hopefully you can decrease the likelihood that you will become a battlefield victim. Till tomorrow, peace and blessings to all.
I'm the deputy chairman of the city. So we say, we always say the Black Panther Party that they can do anything they want to do. We might not be back. I might be in jail. I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you remember I said with the last words on my lips that I am a revolutionary.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have told you turn the other cheek. And they met it with a bat, fuck them protesting them citizens. Told you go fight in the war, Vietnam, you died good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around a pump crack right up in your city. And they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue. One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. So one day you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. For those of you who don't know the pain, the government was slinging out them O's of cane, and bullets and propaganda was no cocaine. So on the same day that Hova came, J. Edgar and his Minuteman raided Will O'Neill, waited. Said it event, chairman drinks, so when the house was eventually taken. Shots went off, he was never even waking. 21 years old, saw his final destination. Said neutralize the threat, also called assassination. Chicago police acquitted on accusation that their soldiers he was born to never make it. Are you willing to die for your cause? Even if it's two in the head, you dying in the hall. They say united we stand, divided we fall. Divided we fall. One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. So one day you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Where did our rebels go? I said, where did our rebels go? Malcolm, Huey, Fred. They ended up dead. Where did our rebels go? I said, where did our rebels go? Malcolm, Huey, Fred. So tell me who's next?
Machine guns and all types of gas. Rat-a-tat-tat, boom, boom, boom. No, this wasn't no Vietnam nor the Korean War. This is right here in your backyard, boys and girls. December 4th, 1969. Chicago, Illinois. The time was 4:35. Now, has your memory failed you? Or am I being too vague? Or do you want details of death while I flash back on this raid? Make sure he's asleep, drugged, and disarmed. You see, it was pigs hunting panthers on this fucking animal farm. They pulled cats from their cribs and they blocked up the street. Hinched me in the phone truck with floor plans and armed to the teeth. Boom, 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 rat-a-tat-tat-tat. Defense Captain Mark Clark laid lifeless on that front room floor. While pigs and more pigs kept coming through the door. China Dow left wounded as she sat in that chair. To the pigs, it was a dream. To me, it was a fucking nightmare. Included with the cows that were captured and shot. Verlina Brewer, BJ, and my god daddy Doc. Cordite smoke was so thick that you couldn't even breathe. Blood stains and bullet holes in my injured camaraderies. Where does he sleep? What's his hours? No chances on his deal. The information was supplied by some Negro named O'Neill. Mission incomplete, so they dared not stop. And there's still some unanswered questions on the role that you played, True Lock. While I was in the womb, I heard those boom, boom, boom. Over 99 rounds released in that raid. Premeditated murderers who poisoned his Kool-Aid. Bang, bang, boom, boom, boom. I remember that pig pressing the steel on my mama's stomach. In the cold, opening her robe and telling her nigga no running. They went to that room, gave him two more shots to his head. They couldn't even leave the murder scene until they made sure he was dead. They smiled and they grinned with the deeds they had done. They even chanted Chairman Fred was dead while he splashed through his blood. The media made up lies and state's attorney told tales. Before I was born, I was selling my mom in the jail cell. That day I'll always remember. Yes, I will. Boom, boom, boom. Rat-a-tat-tat, boom, boom, boom.
Begin with the modern period of, I guess we could start with 1956 for our generation. This was the beginning of the rise of Dr. Martin Luther King. Dr. King decided that in Montgomery, Alabama, black people had to pay the same prices on the buses as did white people, but we had to sit in the back. And we could only sit in the back if every available seat was taken by a white person. If a white person was standing, a black person could not sit. So Dr. King and his associates got together and said, "This is inhuman. We will boycott your bus system." Now understand what a boycott is. A boycott is a passive act. It is the most passive political act that anyone can commit, a boycott. Because what the boycott was doing was simply saying, "We will not ride your buses." No sort of antagonism. He was not even verbally violent. He was peaceful. Dr. King's policy was that nonviolence would achieve the gains for black people in the United States. His major assumption was that if you are nonviolent, if you suffer, your opponent will see your suffering and will be moved to change his heart. That's very good. He only made one fallacious assumption. In order for nonviolence to work, your opponent must have a conscience. The United States has none.
John Hayes with Hood News, and you're listening to the Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned.
The white right wing is using the black militants to wage full-scale war against the black people in America.
Well, as I see it, the full-scale war against us has been going on for some 400 years.
I mean, completely, but, white us out, the black people out. I mean, that they can open the concentration camps. They can have justification of the backing off the black ghetto, wiring it off, put troops around it. Do you think the right wing agitating, say, the Black Panther mania, the black militant group, in that direction?
I don't really think that whether they're agitating or not. I won't say that they're not. But what they're putting themselves in for is quite a different thing. You see. In other words, as far as black people being slaughtered, we're slaughtered every day. And historically, 50 million black people were killed on the Middle Passage alone, according to Melvin J. Herskovich. And this was an act of genocide, which is not talked about. And that the only thing people talk about is the plight of the Jews, where 6 million were killed. And when I state that 50 million black people were killed, just bring them to this country, no one understands this. But what I'm saying is that our real danger is not the Burchites or the Minutemen or some other fanatics. That our danger is really the people who wear the uniform of the establishment, dressed in the clothes of the military or the police department. They're strong enough to wipe us out, they're strong enough to inflict great harm upon the community. And this thing about the fanatics going around agitating, I don't think it will have a great consequence to the black community. The killing of little Bobby Hutton, our treasurer, was a matter of attempting to wipe out the leadership of the Panther, along with getting rid of Eldridge Cleaver, because of his book Soul on Ice, that reveals many things about the corruption of the penal system. Not only the Black Panther Party, black people in general are in danger. As you would note, that in the community where the police ambushed the Panthers, that the police fired upon the community in general. they fired in people's homes where there might have been women and children. Matter of fact, I understand that a child was almost killed, and that it was a continuation of the traditional tactics, not only of the Oakland Police Department, but the police throughout the country. And an immediate end will have to be put to this, and I think that what's happening now is that the Black Panther Party is merely speeding up time. As we know that whenever a man becomes frantic and strikes wildly, that he's becoming very weak. He's striking now everyone in the world, and we know that he won't be able to engage the whole colored world into a war, and also fight a civil war here with the revolutionary people of America.
I'm the deputy chairman of the state of Illinois Black Panther Party, Fred Hampton. I have the pleasure now to introduce who I believe is one of the baddest motherfuckers in the world. A man that did something that a lot of us ought to be very glad that he did. He was a part of making the only party which exists in the United States today that represents the people. As a matter of fact, he was one half. Him and Huey P. Newton started out in 1966. Sometimes I think where some of us were in 1966. I think what we would have said if we'd heard about some niggas going out in the street talking about cans of guns, fighting all them police because we didn't know they were pigs out there in the street. And I think I'm speaking for the whole party of the state of Illinois. I know I am. When I say that we love Huey P. Newton. We love Elvis Cleaver. We love Bobby Hutton. We love the Black Panther Party. And we love Chairman Bobby Seale. We love them because they were the first ones that took a stand against capitalism and racism and said that we'll fight it till the end. We said we join the line somewhere, motherfucker. If you try to pass us, we'll blow your brains out. They were the first ones that came through with the program that was initiated for the benefit of the people. All those things that I named, the reasons why we love them are reasons that make it beneficial to us. But let me simply say, when I'm introducing Brother Bobby, that we love him because it's lovely to love. Tell me about the people.
You know what we're going to do?
We are going to defend ourselves because Huey P. Newton said that power is the ability to define phenomena and make it act in a desired manner. Power is the ability to define phenomena and make it act in a desired manner. What kind of phenomena? Social phenomena. What is a social phenomena? Black people, Mexican American, any kind of people begins to learn that the social phenomenon is that in fact U.S. racist, decadent, capitalist, imperialist America is a police state. That a police state exists here, that these pigs are doing nothing but protecting the average businessman and the demagogic politicians, protecting the exploitative system that they got going. That in fact we are tired of it, we are sick of it, you've been brutalizing black people, you've been murdering and lynching them, black people are tired of it. Black people's vanguard of the revolution all of a sudden, and it's phenomenally correct also, but we are concerned with that social phenomena. We are concerned with that exploitation. We are concerned with the oppression that black people and all other peoples in the world who are suffering the same common oppression that we are suffering today. The thing is we have the ability to define it. Still, if we have the ability to define it, the only next thing to do is get organized. Get organized. So when a pig walks up to you, or a pig gets a job with the people, you'll be so organized, you'll be learning some tactics, you'll be learning some revolutionary principles, you'll be having some guns hit out somewhere, you have some proper tactics. That when the pig gets a job with you, the pig gets wrong, you whoop your guns out on him, blow him away, and then you have the ability, in fact, you have made that pig act in a desired manner.
Because because they never want to meet him on the battlefield.
See, America, in terms of where she goes and, you know, like who she controls, her whole sphere of influence is diminishing. America is fighting on about 5 or 6 different fronts right now. Latin America, you know, like Africa, Middle East, and Vietnam, and here domestically. So I think that, you know, given the system and given that it operates off the military-industrial complex, which means that war is profitable, and that, you know, like General Steele, or USS Steele, must make steal the tanks to hire people, you know, to give people jobs so they can spend the money to buy other goods. The very fact that the system operates off that principle means that when the man comes back, when the man is run out of every country, then it will become necessary to wage war in his own country.
Control our community. Everything that's in your community that you don't control is a weapon against you. Public education as it exists today is a weapon against black people. TV and news media, especially the WPP, White Power Press, White People's Paper, and White People's Power are enemies against black people. Now, what the white press does is that it makes black people an enemy of black people. We also recognize that individuals do not create rebellions. Conditions do. Until they begin to address themselves to those conditions, rebellions will continue and they will escalate. They will escalate. Sometimes the question has been raised about why black men fight and have fought for this country. It is the black man's implacable will to be free that makes him fight for this country. And it is that same will that will make him fight this country, fight this country, fight this country. I want to address myself now to problems as they exist in the black community across America. And America cannot be considered as a stable and just society. But no stable and just society can mount a successful offensive against black youth who break a window and at the same time plead that it is powerless to protect black youth who are being murdered because they seek to make American democracy a reality, reality, reality. Time a black church is bombed or burnt, that is violence in our streets. Each time a black body is found in the swamps of Mississippi and Alabama, that is violence in our land. Each time black right workers cannot be protected by the government, that is anarchy. Each time a police officer shoots and kills a black teenager, that is urban crime. You see, we recognize America for what it is. The Fourth Reich. And we tell America to be on notice, because if you are gonna play Nazis, black folks ain't gonna play Jews.